programming is supported by the Fitzgerald Theater. You can sign up for the online events newsletter, The Gatsby, for advance information on Fitzgerald Theater concerts and literary programs. There's more at fitzgeraldtheater.org.
Support for ClimateCast comes from Garlock French Corporation, providing homeowners and commercial building owners roofing, chimneys, and more since 1932. Locally owned, Garlock French understands the importance of design, craftsmanship, customer service, and value. Garlock-French.com.
We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
In Kansas, it was 118 degrees. Now, you leave a candle on your porch in that kind of temperature, and it melts like a stick of butter.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
I'm Carrie Miller, and it's time for ClimateCast. It's our weekly conversation about the science of climate change with NPR meteorologist Paul Hudner. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about how tree planting is anticipating Minnesota's changing climate. But first, we're talking about how the Marshall Islands are already experiencing the consequences of climate change in dramatic ways. This is really something, Paul. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Yeah, good to be here. Very interesting stuff.
I was just reading about it again this morning online. They declared a state of emergency last month over drought. They're not getting enough rainfall, so
right.
They don't have access to fresh water. That's one side of the islands. The other side of the islands, the sea is rising so fast, so they're being inundated with seawater.
Yeah, this is a place that's quite literally on the front lines of climate change. You know, we think of sometimes climate change an abstract concept, not in the Marshall Islands. Could it be the next Atlantis? I mean, that's what we're looking at here, perhaps, in the next decades or so, Carrie. Marshall Islands, South Pacific, 34 coral atolls. That's the top of an ancient volcano that's kind of sinking into the ocean. And all of these islands are at most 6 feet above sea level. Most of the areas are a foot or two or three above sea level. So you start talking about 68,000 residents in the Marshall Islands and a foot of sea level rise. That's a big deal.
Do you remember a few years ago, the president of the Marshall Islands government, mm-hmm. held a summit underwater to bring attention to climate change. He was talking about how it's changing the quality and the character of the oceans, as well as what's happening on land.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the drought, and one of the things that they're pinpointing is the shift in weather patterns that used to bring pretty reliable and regular rains to the Marshall Islands, especially these afternoon thunder showers that brought fresh water that would restock their fresh water supplies. Well, that has changed, and it's shifted, so they are in more of a long-term drought pattern. We've seen weather changes here in the upper Midwest. We're seeing weather patterns shift around the globe. And so one of the questions is, as these patterns shift, how does it affect these places that are really climate critical, if you will? They're right on the edge of, in this case, survival. They need that water. They need that fresh water from rainfall, and they need to stay above sea level.
Does it look like, in your research about this, that there may come a time when these islands have to be abandoned? Is that how it looks?
I think that ultimately that's where we're headed. I just don't think there's any other way around it. The forecast for sea level rise, Carrie, if you look at the IPCC reports, are anywhere from 7 inches to about 23 inches by 2090, so as much as 2 feet.
Wow.
2 feet of sea level rise. In 100 years, most of these islands are going to be underwater, and those areas that aren't, every time you get a storm surge coming up, they're going to be inundated. So how do you survive on a place that is increasingly underwater? That's the challenge they're facing.
And if you're an American saying, well, that's the Marshall Islands and that's too bad, look at cities like Miami, New York. I mean, all these cities that are that close to sea level on our coast.
Look, one of the interesting things about the U.S. coast is the vulnerability of some of our airports. Many airports are right on the coast. LaGuardia was underwater during Hurricane Sandy last year.
I forgot about that.
But other airports have been identified as very vulnerable to any more sea level rise. San Francisco, Oakland, Honolulu, DCA in Washington, Tampa, Miami, Philly, all vulnerable to even a small sea level rise, and then these storm surges that come up. So yes, it's something that is increasingly going to affect United States cities as well.
And I want to say the government of the Marshall Islands has been calling for some kind of action on climate change for a long time, Trying to motivate the world to do something about that.
So. Right. Interesting quote from Tony DeBrum, who's one of the assistant ministers to the president there. A couple of weeks ago, a U.S. emergency team from FEMA arrived in the Marshall Islands to kind of assess the situation. They had some of these, what they call king tides at the time, these big washes, storm surge that come over the islands. It knocked down some seawalls, flooded the airport runway. And the quote from Tony DeBrum was, "Welcome to climate change."
Yeah, exactly. So a correction here. It was the president of the Maldives.
Okay.
That was not, but they're also facing
they're
the consequences
the
of climate
right.
change as well. So, Paul, let's switch a little bit here to Minnesota and trying to be proactive on climate change. I think this is maybe an optimistic note in our conversation about what's coming. And let's bring Lee Frelick into the discussion. He's the director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology. Hi, Lee. Good to have you on the show.
Good morning. It's nice to be on the daily circuit.
Okay. I'm glad to have you here. So this is, Lee, this is trying to anticipate the changes that are going to happen in American forests and Minnesota forests and planting, trying to get out ahead of that. So tell me how you're thinking about that.
Well, we have a lot of tree species that have the northern edge of their range in southern or central Minnesota, mm-hmm. and the idea is we could try planting those just beyond the northern edge of their range and see if it's already warm enough that they might do okay.
So you're taking trees that normally would need warmer temperatures, and you're trying to push the edge of of where they might thrive.
Exactly. In addition to that, we're doing surveys at the northern edge of the range of trees to see if they're expanding on their own now that the climate is warmer. And there's pretty good evidence of that for red maple in the boundary waters.
Mm-hmm.
There's massive amounts of it expanding right at the northern edge of its range, and also red oak. I mean, one of my graduate students found some red oak stands in the boundary waters, and he showed me a picture, and I said, well, that's got to be down by Duluth. And he said, no, this
really?
Is the boundary waters, and I was just amazed.
Wow.
Lee, hey, it's Paul Huttner. Great to talk to you this morning, and great to have you on the show. Just wondering, you know, what are we seeing already occurring? You touched on that, but I'm a big boundary waters fan. I got up there again this summer, and I was in an area that burned about 25 years ago. We know the process of climate change, and you're the expert on this, can be, you know, the less snow cover, the warmer winters, and then more insects, diseases, storms, and fires that kind of change the forest. How rapidly is this happening up in northern Minnesota?
Well, I think the limit, the climatic limit for some of these trees like red maple that used to exist, which would have been extremely cold winter minimum temperatures, is just no longer there. And so they're expanding extremely rapidly. We're getting thousands of occurrences per square mile now of red maple, for example, throughout the boundary waters. So we know that these temperate zone trees are expanding into the boreal forest up there already. In addition to that, we've had these big straight-line wind events, these big derechos that have leveled the forest, and then after that, that forest is burned during droughts, and it's been an extremely severe fire, which is beyond the severity that you would get under the old climate. And those forests have been changed quite a lot. I mean, a lot of some of the pine species have been almost exterminated, for example, and it's regenerating to a type of forest that you'd expect to see maybe 50 to 100 miles further south.
Wow. Lee, I was wondering if this is changing the way that, you know, the wildlife and the insects interact with the way the forest is changing.
Oh, absolutely. You know, deer are moving further north because the snow cover isn't as deep for as long, and that's a very limiting factor for deer. They're bringing in the brain worm, which is a parasite that doesn't kill the deer, but the deer carry it, and it does kill moose, for example.
Mm.
So that's acting against the moose. So, yeah, there are these complex interactions among all of the things that are living there, the plants, the animals, the parasites, the disturbances that are leading to the changes.
I just have about a minute left, Lee. This is, can we assume, this is not the first time, you know, in the history of of forestry that this has happened. I mean, there is evidence that forests have undergone significant changes in the past, right?
Oh, yeah. The spruce forest, for example, black spruce and white spruce in northern Minnesota, has been as far north as the south shore of Hudson's Bay 4,000 years ago.
Wow.
And as far south as Missouri and Illinois and Tennessee, which would have been at the peak of the last glacial cycle 18,000 years ago. And it kind of migrates through Minnesota on its way north and its way south, and it resides here for a few thousand years each time. But, you know, 4,000 years ago, the spruce was further north, and we had grasses and oak trees in northern Minnesota.
Well, it's good to get a perspective on that. Lee, thank you so much. Good to have you with us for the ClimateCast. Lee Frelich, director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology, and Paul Huttner and I are cooking up a special extended climate cast for the Minnesota State Fair. So I'll see you before then.
Yes.
But that's going to be fun, too.
It's going to be great. Looking forward to it, Carrie.
Good to see you there. That's the climate cast for the week on Minnesota Public Radio News.